between constellations. I've been searching for creation. Moon up high keeps passing by. Well, I have lived by the time.
That was the latest by Sibby called Stars here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. And I've been, Leslie, talking a lot about the difference between BL and GL manga and what I would consider queer manga, I guess, and why I don't always think that BL and GL should appropriately be marketed as 2S LGBT plus literature. A greater tolerance of gay people in Japan has meant more opportunities for queer manga to actually become published. From what I've noticed, lots of this stuff is usually self-published online first and then picked up by a publishing house afterwards. So for example, a really popular example of that actually would be Nagata Kabi's work, who's written extensive autobiographical stories about her experiences with mental illness and alcoholism and loneliness as a lesbian. Though I would say I think a lot of what I've seen being published that is mainstream and queer, I think they still don't always carry that whole, like, this is for queer people type thing. I think a lot of the times it's written for a more general audience, typically to educate and inform, and maybe oftentimes marketed towards cisgender heterosexual people to teach them how to not be to not be homophobic. Though, of course, you know, a lot of it is really informative for anybody who's still trying to understand their identity or just starting that journey. Personally, what I have seen of queer manga that is published in the for mainstream audiences or more general audiences carries this sort of, like, drag queen attending a corporate event during Pride kind of vibe. But, you know, I think more of it is emerging, and that's always really exciting. I mentioned, I think, in the last episode that a lot of really well-written GL that feels a little bit more grounded in the lives of, like, queer women get picked up really quickly in North America. And I think that's a little bit true of the queer manga that we see getting published as well. And so today's manga that I want to discuss, that I'm finally getting to, is one I think that, again, has actually been recommended by a lot of people a lot over the past couple of years since it has been published and then also licensed and distributed in North America. This is called Our Dreams at Dusk. It's by Yuki Kamatani. And this recommendation slash review is not going to be spoiler free. I'm going to be talking all about this series. And throughout it, I'm also going to be mentioning some of the content that can be maybe a little bit distressing for you. Homophobia, bullying, anti-gay slurs, transphobia and misgendering, death, suicide, forced outing, and also sexual harassment and assault of a minor. Please take care of yourself
as you move forward into this episode and if you're going to pick up the manga.
So Our Dreams at Dusk by Yuki Kamatani follows a small collective of people in a real seaside town called Onomichi in Japan. The people of this collective called Cats Clowder are volunteers who demolish old houses to rebuild them into better things. Among the crew are a high school student named Tasuku, who has recently begun having to confront the reality of his queer identity. But the good thing is he doesn't have to do this alone. He's going to do it with the support and help of other members of the LGBTQ plus community who belong to this collective of volunteers. Our Dreams at Dusk is 4 volumes, and I believe it's rated for teens by their distributor. It is a pretty, what I would say, wholesome comic, despite all the things that I had mentioned earlier that it depicts. It is pretty wholesome, and I wanted to talk about it today because I think it's a really, of what is available and what I find intriguing, I think it's a pretty good recommendation for a manga that I feel really confident in saying that it's queer. It's not just like BL or GL. It is queer. The author, Yuki Kamatani, actually is a queer person themselves. They are asexual and aromantic. They also identify as gender X, which is a distinctly modern Japanese identifier for those who are non-binary. Kamatani wrote this story pulling from their own lived experiences as a queer youth, trying to grapple with their identity and also their feelings of isolation and loneliness. And so there you have this really amazing connection already to queer lived experience. And one of the other things that they really tried to do, I think, that's really interesting is they try to depict queerness in community. They do so in a couple of different ways, right? In the story, we meet other members who are LGBTQ+, and we learn about their histories and the issues that they themselves are facing. And they're not just like any type of like nebulous queer issue, like, oh, homophobia bad, oh, transphobia bad, but it's really specifically about the lived experiences that people who hold those identities will face. And so there you get this really interesting exploration about queer issues and social issues as well. I want to talk a little bit about the things that I didn't really fully like about the story before I talk about the thing that I liked the most. One of them being that there is a little bit of like this like will they won't they romance between the main character Tasuku and his new friend Tsubaki, who is his crush. And Tasuku was forcibly outed days before summer vacation began, and he's like struggling a lot, you know, he like nearly commits suicide. And then we're introduced to his crush, Tsubaki, who Tasuku's like really, really, really into, who possibly is also queer. But the way that Tsubaki and Tasuku's relationship is depicted is just feels like so, it just feels so unromantic to me. Partly because Tsubaki is quite homophobic, actually. And I understand that like there's often this trope about how queer people hate ourselves, and so we're like, we just like are constantly bragging on other queer people. That is something that I don't always appreciate, though, in my media. that's just a personal gripe. And I understand that Kamatani wanted to depict the ways in which people struggle with accepting their identity. I felt that Tasuku was already like a pretty good example, though, because he really does, like, he has this moment where he, after he's forcibly outed, you know, the only thing that he can do to kind of defend himself is to say horrible things about gay men, essentially, and kind of deflect. And it's really, really hard to read through. But to have another character kind of do that as well, when confronted with the possibility that he is queer, is like, I don't know, we were already there. And then just the way that, like, this supposed romantic tension is built, I don't think is all that exciting to me. I don't know, maybe this is just like a personal thing, but I felt that it was so uninteresting and so boring that at one point I thought that maybe it was like an editorial choice, like from Yuki Kamatani's editor, that maybe they were like, nobody's gonna read this if there isn't some kind of like cute little BL thing in it. You gotta like make it like kind of cutesy and romantic. And so it's just in there, but maybe Kamatani's like, that's not the point of it. And so they decided to pull like a Louisa May Alcott and like wrote like the worst the worst romance in God's name to defy their editor. I don't know, maybe that's just wishful thinking. I just really did not think that it needed that kind of like romantic edge to the story, though I really appreciate the way that Tasuku and Tsubaki become friends. I really don't think that there's any need to explore their potential romantic tension there. I thought it was boring. The other thing that I really actually did not like about this story is this confusion that I have around an issue that was depicted that's really quite devastating. And I think I just hated this part of the story so much that I kept like blocking it from my memory, because every time I reread this Our Dreams at Dusk, you know, I've read it several times. There is a storyline with a character named Misora. He is an elementary school student, and I'll be referring to this character by he/him pronouns, because that is how he is referred to throughout the story, and that is also how he refers to himself. But Misora likes to cross-dress, and he really likes being praised for how he looks when he is cross-dressing. There's a storyline with him in which Tasuku
really doesn't seem to understand Misora's gender identity and thinks that Misora is confused as well, so takes the opportunity during a summer festival to encourage and help Misora go out in public cross-dressing. Tasuku and Misora go out to the festival, and it's only the two of them that know that Misora is cross-dressing, but Misora is getting praised everywhere. The tensions rise in Misora's story arc when, at the festival, he is molested in a crowd, and when he discloses it to Tasuku because he's in distress, Tasuku's only response is, well, it happened because you look so cute. And the reason why Tasuku says this is because he feels like he can affirm Misora's exploration of gender and presentation by doing so.
You know, that's obviously really, really horrible. And in the manga, when Misora and Tasuku reconcile, Tasuku does address, like, you know, I'm sorry that I said that to make, you know, I just wanted to make you feel good. And then he also says, you know, I'm sorry that I made you go cross-dressing at this event. I was just trying to make you feel affirmed. And then it's just like this, essentially this act of sexual violence is never addressed again. And it just feels really off to me personally. I felt like it was very like, it really seemed to serve mostly as like a plot device for the growth of Tasuku's character. When, I'm not sure if maybe this is just me and the way I interpreted it, but I felt that it was actually quite horrible for this depiction of sexual violence to not also be addressed with the same weight that Tasuku's missteps were addressed. I felt that it was really, really off. And I think that was actually I feel like personally it was really poorly written to that extent. Like, it was just handled quite flagrantly, I think. And I really did not like that. I think every time that I read Our Dreams at Dusk, I'm always shocked by how just badly that plot line is handled. And I think that I truly think I just like completely wipe it out of my memory, because it's just like, it feel, for me, it feels so it feels so shockingly bad. In a manga that otherwise I think is like, tries to be quite sensitive. So I feel like maybe I just had to share that, because I really don't want anybody else to go into this manga not knowing that this happens in it, and not knowing that I just don't feel that it was handled very well. I guess another thing that I don't always super like about this manga is like, some of the illustrations don't feel all that consistent. It is a very beautifully drawn comic, but sometimes you'll get like a character who randomly has a head that is like 2 times the size of somebody else's head. And it's not a child. It's like 2 people who are like basically adult age, and they have like vastly different head sizes. So that can sometimes stand out. Otherwise, it's very beautifully illustrated. Kamatani cites the work of Moto Hagio, who is like a legendary shoujo manga artist, who explored throughout her work themes around loneliness and pain and yearning through BL storylines, and also through really gorgeous metaphorical illustrations. It was really great to see that kind of homage being painted in this story as well, in terms of the visual aesthetics of it. But here's my favorite part about Our Dreams at Dusk, and ultimately why I think it's if people are interested in reading a queer manga, knowing the stuff that I have complained about already, why they should check it out. I mentioned that it does a really good job of like depicting queer issues and members of the queer community. One of the things that I really love about this story, though, is that it is set in a small seaside town, and the members of this collective of queer people are multi-generational. And so that shows a couple of things, right? That queerness can exist anywhere, and that there are lots of queer people, lots of different types of queer people who exist anywhere. But that it also shows that queer people exist at any age, as well. Our protagonist is a high school student, and the story is obviously like for teenagers to read, basically. But I think like it is really amazing to see this character interact with people of various different ages. You know, Tasuku kind of becomes like this older brother figure to Misora, who's an elementary school student. But he is also taken under the wings of multiple characters who are in their, like, I don't know, late 20s and 30s. And one of the characters who frequents the lounge, who's a mainstay character, he's an older man. He's like got this like big fluffy white beard, and he's been with his partner for 30 years.
In that sense, I think there's this really interesting play around time and generations, in that the adults at Cat's Clowder have gone through a lot of the hardship that Tasuku is experiencing and will experience in his life, and they've come out the other end, and so they can kind of like model what it is for him to live a queer life. And at the same time, there's also this glimpse into the queer future, sort of, and a question of how Tasuku is going to be able to model those things as well for a younger person like Misora, and how Misora has that kind of to look forward to also. You know, despite the really poorly written sexual assault storyline, as I had mentioned,
one of the things I also really appreciated about the manga, and I don't know if this is what Yuki Kamatani had intended, but the character who really ushers Tasuku into the collective is the lesbian character, Daiichi. And it's really cool to see that kind of like depiction of a lesbian character being a really strong advocate for the community. And I have to say that when a manga is able to ground itself in queer experiences and queer community like that, to be able to show the reader that there is a life for you wherever you are, and there are people who will be there with you wherever you are, there will be people who will guide you, and there will be people for you to eventually guide, that is a very heartwarming and I think also affirming thing for a lot of queer people, especially younger readers. And I think this is a really notable way to go about exploring the lives of queer people in a way that feels really lived and dignifying. If I were to give Our Dreams at Dusk by Yuki Kamatani a rating out of 10, I think I would give it like maybe like 8 out of 10. I really have to dock points for that plot line with Misora. Really, I really gotta dock points for that. It's horrible. But the rest of it is pretty amazing. And I really think that, you know, if you want to read a manga that is, in my opinion, like queer manga, you should check it out. I have talked a lot about manga the past couple of weeks, so I think I'm going to put a lid on it and let it be for a little bit. Our Dreams at Dusk isn't even my favorite queer manga, if I'm going to be honest, but I think it is really notably good, and it's worth checking out, so please consider giving it a read. You can pick it up at your local independent bookstore. You can like order it, and I think also I've seen copies of it at several public libraries in the Greater Vancouver area, so go check that out as well. That's Our Dreams at Dusk by Yuki Kamatani. Thank you so much for listening to today's Typically Tuesdays. Thank you so much for following the series about manga recommendations if you've been following it. If you're interested in hearing more about manga and you've missed the rest of the series, you can check it out at cjsf.ca. It's all up in the archives. This is definitely a topic that I will be revisiting, but not quite so soon, because, oh my god, it's been a full month. Again, thank you so much for listening to the series and for listening to Typically Tuesdays. We're going to close off today with one final track, probably of no surprise, because this series has been so gay. Here is a great song from a very gay album. This is Forever Is a Feeling by Lucy Dacus off of her latest full-length record of the same name. I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM, and I will talk to you very soon.
I crossed the line.